Welcome back, everybody, to another Ludini Rock and Roll Circus Musicians Mastermind. Today's topic, are these four trends really going to be the future of the music business? Soundcarts.com recently laid out four trends that they see as the future of the music business, including the effect of AI. Really interesting topic there. The consumption of music, how we consume music, the convergence of music with other media, and how the financial aspect will detach itself from the artistic side. So on today's call, we're going to analyze these points and then ask some critical questions to find out, is Soundcharts right? How much of what they're saying do we think is right? You know, I believe this was written probably before the virus situation. So how does that affect it? So we're just going to kind of do an analysis of this. The reason we're bringing this up is because when you do a search on current music business trends, this is the first article that comes up. So I'm imagining a lot of people are probably seeing it, reading it, and maybe even have some questions about it. So we thought we would kind of, throw our opinions out there at it as we are as experts, because we know everything, right, guys? We are the experts. That's sarcasm, internet. I know internet doesn't do well with sarcasm these days, so I'm just saying. So what's up, guys? Did you guys have a chance to kind of maybe give this a quick peek here, or
had a quick look?
Okay. Yep.
So let me
filling more as we go.
We will. It just won't open in the browser that I had up here. So let me open it in another browser. Talk amongst yourselves for a minute. Let's paste that bad boy there. There we are.
That's interesting. Okay.
It doesn't like old Safari. It likes new Chrome. Okay, so how AI will shape all aspects of the music industry. Now, this is something I don't know how I feel about. Because, I mean, Carrie has a little different. I know, Carrie, you don't like automations and stuff like that, especially when it comes to marketing and things like that. You feel like a personal touch is better.
They have their place.
Okay.
But with a very big asterisk, which we'll get to in a moment.
And I know that Joe, as as a marketing guy, does see the sort of benefit of it as well, and I think we all see the benefits, and it just then there are also other sides of it as well. So we're gonna try to get into some of that. But where I am a little concerned about automation, and maybe because I'm old, I don't think music itself should be automated. I think that music should be performed by the musician. Even if you are a DJ, somebody who's working with samples and things like that, that should have some organic aspect to it. So, the first thing that comes up here is this sort of idea. Where do you guys want to start? You guys want to start with the marketing, or do you want to start with the music?
Well, let's just speaking about it from an artistic point of view.
Okay.
Because AI, this is a big subject, and AI does different things. All it is a computer making calculations on what settings it's going to apply. That's all it is. And that can be applied to anything. At the moment, one of the big areas there is mastering. About whether you'll use automated mastering versus an actual mastering engineer who'll listen to it. But the other one that the article seems to be talking about a lot is actual automated composition, in terms it will tell you what will be the best chord sequence to use or what drum beats you can use. And it will probably do, and you could probably switch that on, it'd do something that sound pretty good. And it would also sound exactly like every other person who used that AI. This is the problem I had, and I first encountered this in the 90s. And I think it was around about 96, 97. I walked into a music shop and there was a synth workstation, as they were using them at the time. And I pressed a key and a whole song came out and it sounded fantastic, way better than anything I could have. Or I could have done the same thing, but it would have taken me ages. And I thought, wow, I could do that and I could have this whole song done tomorrow and I could put it out there. It'd be brilliant. But then I thought about it. And I looked around the room and I saw about 50 other people who were in that music shop at that time. And I thought about the footfall in that music shop all the way through the week. And I thought about all the people who've come along and pressed that key and had the idea for the exact same song. I thought, you know, this totally isn't why I'm a musician. And so I walked away from it and I never bought that instrument because I knew that wasn't for me. That wasn't my path. And the other thing with things like that, and we call them preset monsters, people who will find a preset that's so good they never really need to move beyond it. The problem is that little bit of moving beyond it, that little bit of imperfection is what's going to make you stand out as an artist. And one of the problems with I have with a lot of people who never go beyond loops or a lot of loop-based music, and this is the stuff that comes down the pipe and freshen the net. Well, listen to this. It can sound great for about the first minute. And I'll think like, yeah, this sounds like this. I'm booging to this. But then the second minute, which is the point when it should have developed into something or should have gone somewhere, they can't actually change the loops. All they can do is add new loops or take out the last one. And after a while, it kind of gets old really quickly. It sort of feels like they've been limited by what they can't do rather than being empowered by what they can do. And that's that thing, really. What are you gonna do once you get to that point where this thing has gone as far as I can? I've gone as far as I can with this, and now I need to tweak that one thing that's going to make it perfect for what I'm trying to say at this point, and that's going to make it perfect for my identity as a musician. And if at that point you are not able to tweak the exact one thing that you need to tweak, not able to do it quickly and intuitively, then that AI has taken over and it's useless because it's not letting you express yourself as an artist, which is the point.
I think it's also what people want to hear. I don't think that as much as perfect as the computer can do it, until we have, you know, Lieutenant Commander Data, you know, going around, you know, playing the violin or whatever he does in Star Trek. I don't think that, you know, we're going, because we want to hear what the artist has to say. As Tony Robbins says, you know, we love consistency, but we also crave surprise. And if it's always the same, and you made a really good point about people using the same sample patches, the same loops over and over. Our friend Glenn over at Spectre Sound really gets all over this about guitar modelers and drum samples and things like that, because what ends up happening is all the records end up sounding the same. There's so much of that going on because it is so easy to get a good sound with that stuff that you don't try. And the music ends up sounding, everybody ends up sounding the same. There's this sort of like sameness, this tiredness that happens very, very quickly. You have to understand why people have access to stuff so quickly. They can hear your song and, 10,000 other songs, with the click of pressing their cell phone, that if everybody is using that same, it sounds awesome, that great snare pack that they got from, whatever company, that wears on people. People are like, they won't be able to articulate why, but they'll just know that this really is all sorts of sounds the same. Same guitar sound, same stuff like that. So this is where I'm concerned about automation on that side of it. I think on the marketing side of things, there are things that could be done in terms of, what will happen is just in terms of being able, because this is what Soundcharts does, by the way. This is not advertising for Soundcharts. I have no affiliation with them, nor do I testify whether their service is good or bad. But what they are all about there is the data analysis of where, who is buying what, and, so that you could talk to that audience better. And I think that automation in terms of the computers being able to show you this, it's these type of people. So you can define your niche maybe a little easier, a little quicker, and go and get the music to people. And I think it helps the consumer too, because, they don't want to be bogged down with, going through thousands and thousands of songs to find four or five that they like. I think that it has its place. Joe, do you have any comments on AI in terms of the marketing space?
Carrie and I have a few comments space. From AI and content creation. Right now, Tony Robbins interviewed a AI robot, and that robot he sat down and spoke to and interacted with him, and it had emotional faces and stuff, but it seemed like the conversation wasn't fluent. It wasn't like a smooth person-to-person conversation yet, but it's gonna get there. I mean, they're putting so many advancements into it. This isn't something that's gonna go away. So it's not there yet. Now, taking it into a content creation standpoint, about a year ago, I actually had a client who bought an AI system. And that AI system was intentionally meant to create articles for SEO. So it would go out, it would search the net for keywords, it would pull in a bunch of articles, and then it would mash those articles together, rewrite it for you. And then, you know, you were supposed to just be able to put it out there on the net to get SEO to come back to your website. This didn't work very well because there were a lot of mistakes. There were phrases right after each other that didn't quite make sense. But it was a beginning point. Like, if you didn't know what you were going to write about, you just wanted to write on a topic, it did give you a very good beginning point. So, like Carrie said, you know, if you moved beyond just letting the AI mash all those articles together and then use that as a standpoint to write your own article, which meant you still needed to be a writer. So we couldn't hand those articles off to someone who's a VA in the Philippines who isn't a writer because they would look at it and they'd be like, I don't know what to do. You know what I mean?
Looks good to me.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what happened. Looks good to me. Published it on the blog, and it didn't do anything.
Right.
It didn't make any sense.
Yeah.
So from there, I don't know if that software's made a lot of advancements. We kind of dropped it. I was looking into IBM's Watson and a few other AIs. And for the everyday person at that standpoint, those were not quite affordable. But to like go out and figure out, okay, someone just bought a electric guitar. They're most likely going to need this, 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 and this. They may need lessons. They may need this. They may need that. And to base the standpoint off of, okay, you just had this interaction, we found it online, now we know you're going to need one of these things, or you're going to be interested in this or interested in that. That stuff is already available. It's been available for years. It's just, like I said, it's not something that the everyday person can get a hold of. It's not in, like, you know, ClickFunnels or WordPress or something like that. But that stuff will get more affordable as time moves on. The thing you got to remember is, it's going to take a human being to input some of that stuff for a long time. And then I don't know where it's going to go from there. I'm not pretending to be an expert on the algorithms and everything on AI.
I think that you make a great point about it. And I think that maybe just having these things give you the sort of maybe bullet points that maybe are out there that are swimming around. And then, you know, I work with an awesome a writer who writes for my brick and mortar. I don't know why I'm not hiring her to write for my music business. I should put you in touch. Do you know Renee Hoy, Joe?
I know she wrote.
Yeah, she's fantastic.
I'm gonna reach out to her then.
Yeah, so she is she's really, really, really good. She writes my brick and mortars newsletter and things like that. Very efficient. But because she is, you know, she's a real person and she is very fluent in the English language. It is her main language and she knows writing and educated on that. That's a niche for her. She's gonna be able to take those, you know, ideas and turn them into something. So that is a place where you can, you know, outsource something, you know, to somebody like that. She is not a $5 person on Fiverr, though. Mm-hmm. I suspect that. And I heard John Ojaka talk about this, Carrie. I don't know if you'd ever heard him, but he did he gave a talk on how he gave an example of how he had done an article and he had done it just the way Joe had talked about. And he said it was absolutely terrible. He showed it to the class, you know, it just was just really clunky. And Michael and I experimented with this a couple of years ago and they were really terrible. Like, you know, Mike is a great dude. But he's in the Philippines. He's a VA in the Philippines and he doesn't have the kind of like writing savvy that, like, you know, somebody like me or Renee or Joe would have, even Carrie writes for a blog. So, you know, see him, it was like, oh, looks good to me. I'm like, no, this isn't going to fly. So we just, you know, we unplugged from that and stopped doing it. So it is limited right now. Where can it go in the future? I mean, it is, the technology is expanding exponentially. So who knows? But I don't think, I in terms of content creation, I think I had a marketing person come into my office many years ago and said, we firmly believe in our company that the content needs to come from the business. Whatever that business is, it needs to come from the business. And I think at the end of the day, I think you're going to stand out by just doing your own content.
Yeah.
Suck it up.
Well, what did we say before when we were talking about your team? Assembling a team is not about not having to do any work yourself. In fact, it's the opposite. At the end of the day, you're still going to have to do all the work. And everything you bring into your team, whether it's human or a robot, is just there to help you with that work or to get things on there. But you've still got to supervise it. You've still got to know what it's doing. And you're still responsible for what comes out the other end, even when they shit the bed.
All right. Let's move on to this one, because I know everybody has something to say about this. How we consume music is going to change. I don't know. I think it's pretty great right now. I mean, yes, there are voice queries with Alexa. You know, Alexa, play me Led Zeppelin. Alexa, play me Britney Spears. Oh, boy, I'm showing my age. I'm trying to think of somebody current. Help me out, Carrie. Alexa, play me Post Malone. How's that?
I think we're post Malone as well, but yeah,
we're into post. Wow, it is. We've gone beyond. We're like post Malone. So I mean, I think that voice query is. I mean, I have. I still have the old Roku player that doesn't have the voice on it. I'm holding on because I'm old and I don't want to change. But I'm, you know, I keep getting the pop up saying that they've got new technology and stuff. So I'm going to have to go that way. So voice query, how has that changed things? I mean, I guess you could say, Alexa, play me a sad song. Alexa, play me some heavy metal. I mean, so you get these kind of playlists that are based on what? Ideas, mood, as opposed to play me the Black Sabbath catalog, right? So is this do you guys see this as a maybe more of a thing as we move forward?
So just like the articles where it would go out and find keywords and mash it all together, it wasn't relevant to a specific mindset, like a specific theory that you wanted to make the article flow from, or specific vantage point. So when it comes to saying, Alexa, you know, play me a blank, you know, an XYZ song, like play me a romantic song, you're not always going to get exactly what you were looking for, because she doesn't actually know unless you say, hey,
Alexa,
play.
She? I did not know that. Go ahead.
So, well, you can change its name too.
Oh.
So, yeah, if you're let's say you're a girl and you don't want to talk to a girl all the time, you want to talk to a guy. I don't know if you can change the voice, but I know you can change the name. But anyway, so let's say you want to do a search and you just want a specific like type of song. You're better off just to say, hey, play this song, which I do all the time. You know what I mean? My 6-year-old does all the time.
I mean, the closest I come to it is on Spotify. Is if I'm in the mood for something particular, I'll come up with a track that I've got in my mind that exemplifies it, and then hit radio on from that. It's not always valuable. Generally, it'll do something at least in the same genre, or that things will stem on from that.
That's
all right.
While that's hit or miss, I find that the more you use it, Carrie, the more hit you get and less miss, because it gets to know. It's maybe this is spooky for some folks. But it does kind of get to know you over like everything that you pick on there all the time. And I have to say that Spotify and I have an awesome relationship. Spotify almost always plays me amazing stuff, but I am very active on it. I use it daily, probably picking stuff, telling it to play me a radio. And I will de-like. There's like a button you can press if like something you feels like, no, Alexa or Spotify, this doesn't work. You can hit a button and it will take that song out of the mix for you, so it won't do that again. So you can sort of slap its hands and say, no, 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 not that song. So I think that that is really powerful. And I have noticed over the past couple of years that that has just gotten better and better and better and better. And there are playlists based on mood. And we talked about optimizing Spotify a few podcasts ago. And one of the things that you can do is instead of just creating like a heavy metal playlist or a techno playlist or whatever and putting your music on there, create, you know, workout, rock and roll workout playlist, you know, things like that. Because people are like, oh, I want to go for a walk. You know, I'm going to the gym and I'm going to power lift, you know. So they're going to be looking for the people, you know, and I'm just using exercise. It could be anything. I want to meditate. There's tons of people that have made playlists based on these type of ideas. What about the album? Because they're calling this the post-album era.
Yeah, well, it's been the post-album era for the past 25 years, hasn't it, according to...
Carrie, go. I love when you talk about this. Go ahead.
Right, no. my attitude to the post-album era is... because ultimately... if you are deeply into music and you're into that, there are times when you just want to hear a track. And this is something I think often, and apologies to Joe here, because I know you're a regular marketing guys tend not to get this, because what they can see is numbers. And I'm talking about the sort of marketing guy who thinks that a robot making a pop song is going to succeed human beings to the point where you don't need to do it anymore. Because as far as they're concerned, of course not, because they only see it in that way.
Yeah.
But if you're an actual music enthusiast in that you look out for music or art that's going to move you in a certain way, then you're going to want that. There's going to be times when you want tracks that come together like that, that short terms. But then there's times when you just want to sit down and spend an hour in the company with an artist who's going to take you on a journey. And that's what a good album does. An album is not just a random collection of songs. It is a record of what that artist was doing at that particular time in their career. And it will take you on. There will be, even in the CD area, I still see albums in terms of sides. There will be... starting going up to the midpoint, which is the end of side one, then it takes you through again right up to the semi-final slot and the climax. And that whole thing is in itself a satisfying journey. Now, albums that do not deliver that, fine.
A lot.
End them tomorrow. But the idea that albums that do that, that they're also going to sort of go, I still want to hear a good album. Because there are times when, look, I've got an hour now, I'm going to sit in the bath or whatever. I've got an hour, I'm driving off to the next city and it's going to take me an hour to get there. So I want to put on an album. I want to spend that time in the company of one artist who's going to take me somewhere. And that's when you're going to listen to an album.
Okay, and I want to add to what you're saying, because I agree, amen, brother, on all that. But what has to happen, guys, you have to make music that is good. Like, you here's where the album started into decline. The album started in decline in the 90s when you had these bands that like they had like a great song and you bought the album and you were like, what the hell is this? The rest of it was filler. And it just became something that started to happen more and more and more. The other phenomenon was bands would put out a great first album because it took them 5 years to write all those songs and really hone it. They played it live a bunch, and then they went in the studio and put out a great album. Then the second album, they couldn't do it again. So people started to get down on the album because they felt like, you know, time was being wasted, energy was being wasted, attention was being wasted. So some of this lies with the musician. People will love to listen to your album, I think, if it is a good album. Make all killer, no filler, guys. Just really make sure that like every song, you just don't want to fill up an album just because, make an album. So like, I don't know, just throw this together, slap that together. You can't do that because people have so many options nowadays, even more so than ever. So if you're good, albums are great. And I agree with Carrie, but make them good. Make it go like, wow, man, all these songs are like really good. Like,
this was a problem with that era when, certainly in the 90s, because some CDs could go to 80 minutes. And I think there were pressure on the record companies to actually fill up that 80 minutes of the
artist. That is such a capitalism. I'm not knocking capitalism, but it's such a capitalist idea. You know what I mean? Well, we have to fill up the whole thing, you know, give people the maximum, you know, even if it's shit, you know.
Yeah, and that meant that a lot of that journey of going on an album, either there'd be a lot of stuff that would just stall you along the way, which is just in there to make the time up.
Exactly.
Or it would reach a climax point in that album. And you think, yeah, this is it. But then you realize that you've still got 20 minutes of things goes left. What was it the guy said to me that time about the pot's boiled over and I'm not hungry anymore?
Yep.
And so many albums in the 90s hit that point where the pot boiled over and you weren't hungry anymore.
And
it reflected badly on the album.
Another thing with this is there are great albums from the late 60s, 70s, and 80s, etc. And I feel that some of these artists have screwed them up a bit by adding extra tracks. So you go on Spotify and there's the re-release of Who's Next. I know that album sideways. It's one of my favorite albums of all time. And I pulled it up on Spotify a couple of years ago. I'm like, oh, yes, I'm just in the mood to listen to this. I was just chilling out, having a drink, and the album finishes, and then more songs keep playing. I'm like, no, these songs aren't on the album. What? Like, it has that big finish, and then, like, it keeps, I'm like, no, it's done. Stop. So that's an example of, like, how you can overdo it. Make everything count, even if it's seven songs or whatever it's going to be. Just make sure that they're absolutely killer. And we did a podcast, and Joe and Carrie and I are actually going to create a course based around this on how to do like a year cycle to get the album on, how to do it in the right way so you make sure that you really have fans engaged. We'll get to that. Also, I want to kind of like throw, I don't want to comment too much on this, but just say that albums aren't really gone because vinyl is back. And I mean, no, it's not back the way it was in the 70s, but people are getting into vinyl, and it sells very, very well. So I'm not so sure that that albums are going away.
So, okay, my turn.
The marketing guy's got to say something.
As far as the albums go, there's so many albums that I just don't get it. Like you listen to the album, you listen to one song and it's about this and it's, you know, someone trying to make enough money, you know, on love, and they're trying to like, it's lovey-dovey, but at the same time, there's some, you know, there's some struggle in it. And then you go to the next song, and then you go to the next song, and it's like, they don't quite jive all together. And a lot of newer artists, like you said, just don't do that. With AI, you can go on and ask for a certain mood, a certain, environment, and I don't do it because I don't spend my time on this stuff like you guys do. If I brought my 21-year-old son up, he would tell you all about it because that's all he does is sit outside, smoke, and listen to music. Like, he knows all these platforms well. But when I sit out there and listen to him playing it, it takes me through an emotional feeling over 2 or 3 hours, and it brings up songs that go right along with each other, and it keeps that mood flowing. Not like an album would. So AI has its place, and having individual songs that can be put together one after another to create a mood and an environment is a definite skill. And I know there's people out there who do that. I don't know what they're called. Are they DJs or mixologists? I don't know, whatever. So that definitely has its place. Now, when it comes to vinyl and it comes to like the nostalgia of wanting an album itself, you either got really engraved with the artist at some point, or you grew up with the music, or for some reason you already have a connection to that and you want that. So it's not like it's going to ever completely go away unless we lose contact with the artists themselves at some point, which is totally possible. You know, happen.
But I think the way the guerrilla marketing approach kind of supersedes or prevents that, because the reason people are listening, and this has to do with you who are listening. This is not going to apply to Ozzy Osbourne and Post Malone and people like that. I'm talking about people like indie artists. The reason Amanda, what's her name? Amanda Palmer, people like that, they built a career on the relationship with the audience. So I think for artists like that the album can actually be very, 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 very powerful. It may go away for people. Well, like Sheryl Crow announced last year, she released one last album. She's like, I'm not releasing any more albums ever. I'm just going to put out singles. But if we're putting our money where our mouth is, which is creating relationships with the audience, those folks are invested in us. So they're going to want to know what we're doing. Maybe they're supporting us on Patreon. Believe me, if I'm supporting an artist on Patreon who puts out a record, I want to hear every freaking song. And it better be good. Okay? Like, that's, you know, so people that do, so that's the kind of market we're kind of talking about primarily. Joe, you're absolutely right. Though you're right too, you're absolutely right, and that goes back to like you know, you this idea of people wanting to hear music based on a mood or based on an activity that they are doing, and these platforms do supply that. And the only thing we can hope is that people that are more casual listeners like that might be really turned on by something you do and maybe want to hear the whole album. But that is the same thing in any business, right, guys? Aren't there stores that like you go to all the time? But then there's stores that like, I don't got store. They have some cool stuff, but I only go there once a year because I only need such and such once a year. And I think it's kind of the same thing with art. You know, there's going to be people that you love and you patronize and you go to their check. And there's going to be people you're just kind of casual listeners with. Oh, that's a cool song. You know, I'm not going to run out and join their Facebook group, but yeah, I like that song they do. So I think that it's not going to be like a one or the other. I'm just kind of think reiterating what
that's the
said.
Entire theory of a funnel. And a funnel marketing. And that's, I think, why this article is saying that it gives better opportunity for monetization. Because if you go to these areas and you listen to a playlist and you're like, man, that song really hit home. I really enjoy her voice. I really enjoy the instrumentals. Maybe there's, you know, maybe you want to see the video, or later on the marketing pushes you to a video when you're on, you happen to be on YouTube because you happen to listen to that song on another channel. And then you get interacting with that individual's content, then you search that person out, and then you find their playlist, and their playlist happens to jive. It happens to go, so the song I listened to made me feel this way. Oh, this is telling a story. Song two makes me feel this way. Song three makes me, oh, I really like this person. Then you buy the CD. This is how you have to think, because a funnel takes you from not known and cold to your audience to being known and them finally buying something. And that's why this article is saying that it gives a better opportunity for monetization, is because getting those individual songs and clips and CDs and videos out there and then getting them to go through that process does give you an opportunity for monetization. But one of the key things that came out of this conversation is that I really believe your music should have an idea, a theme,
continuity,
something you stand for in it. That way it yeah. flows.
Well, I mean, I think that is what... if
not
you
all
put
me,
it,
all
that these playlists that Joe's talking about and how stuff flows and all that, that's what your album should do. So I want to get off the album thing. We got other stuff to cover, but that is really right, Carrie. The album should the whole every song in that album should, like, if the album is called Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band, you better have this. Your album better take people through this journey about what's going on and Sgt. Pepper's, and you know, and that is, you know, I mean, that is an extreme example. Okay, that's
and then so use that example. It will end up with A Day in the Life, which has the massive orchestral hit at the end and the slide. So here we are in the universe at the end of it.
Yeah.
So I've never heard that
coming out of the water slide at the end.
Yeah. Would you say,
Joe? So I've never heard that band or that album, but I would assume that if I hear that name, it's going to start off someone's really lonely. You know, it's a very lonely feeling. The music's mellow. It's sad almost. And what would be great is if eventually it reached a climax to where they did a turn. They got excited. They got, you know, fell in love, whatever.
That's exactly what the album does. But that's an example of like what, Carrie? Like one of the greatest albums, if not the greatest album considered by most. Anyways, I want to get off of this. Let's move on.
Well, yeah, it was good. It was the proto concept album by the Beatles.
Yes. Okay. Okay. So let's talk about this, because I number three here, I felt was like a little duh, because I feel like music, fashion, movies, TV, all of that TV has moved to the internet. Okay, whatever. Rock stars have always been involved in these things. I mean, we did a show, we did a podcast a week or so ago about rock star cameos. And it was hard to find movies where there weren't rock stars in them almost. I mean, these guys, you know, so this convergence and so many, like you think about the James Bond films, like that was always a big thing. What artist or what band is going to record the theme song for the new James Bond movie? That, you know, I see movies, fashion. I mean, the Beatles were all about fashion. Going back to the frickin' Beatles, they were all about fashion. They had, you know, Brian Epstein, you know, change their hair around and turn their clothes around and everything to kind of like, you know. So I see kind of like that has kind of always been a thing. But I guess that the article is saying that maybe they're going to converge a little tighter. What are your guys' thoughts on, you know, these sort of barriers between these different media outlets and music? Or are there barriers?
I think we've been saying this all along. I mean, in the very first call I was on with you guys, we used Leah as an example. And she's doing the whole fantasy with the, you know, the boots that have dragons on them and the candles and this and that and the other thing. So she's converging. She's taking that and combining it with something else, which gives her an opportunity for her videos to be very fantasy, for everything to go into different areas. She could then take that into games as she found a video game that someone was producing and get her music into the video game. In marketing, it's called omni-channel or, you know, it's sliding my mind right now. But the idea is to get it out there, get seen as many times as possible on as many platforms as possible. And that's definitely something musicians want to be doing. And I think it in the more broader markets for a long time now. It's just indie artists have to realize that they need to do it and they have opportunities to do it in other areas.
Good point. Good point. You can work. There's things. I mean, I don't want to give a lot of advice today because I want to cover this. But, you know, something like maybe working with a gamer. I don't know, could be something, some way to kind of create, start that relationship, get your foot in that door. I mean, when everybody talks about video games and music, I mean, the first thing now this game is no longer popular, but it was really popular about 10, 15 years ago, Guitar Hero. And there's a lot of music that people had forgotten about that kind of started getting bumped, just like the Rat, just like the Geico commercial with Rat.
I have an example.
But a lot of these songs, like More Than a Feeling, and you know these Journey songs, that like it bought.
I'll tell you, there's a classic example there.
Go ahead.
Did they have "Keep Yourself Alive" by Queen on there?
I think so.
And now "Keep Yourself Alive" is an interesting one because right at the start of their career, Queen released "Keep Yourself Alive" as a single repeatedly. They did it first of all in the first album and it bombed. It didn't sell any, didn't do any business at all until I think it was Seven Seas of Rye was their first hit single. So then when it got around to A Night at the Opera, when they were starting to really get a name, they released it again with exactly the same results. They couldn't give it away. So every time they tried to release Keep Yourself Alive as a single, it did nothing. And it was their other songs that ended up making their career. And then finally, I think it ended up on Guitar Hero. And suddenly people realized, hey, there's this great song called Keep Yourself Alive by Queen. And it's always been a live staple they'd have, but it just never cut it as a single for whatever reason.
Yeah. Sometimes it's just time and place. You know, when people just aren't ready to hear it or whatever. So I sort of see that as kind of an always, I think pop musicians, rock musicians have always had a sense of fashion, a sense of style. You know, one of the reasons we love these folks is because they are sort of fantasy characters to us. So the idea that they show up in movies, video games, get associated with different YouTube channels or whatever, to me is like a no-brainer. And so you should be thinking that of the, I think the indie musicians, and you know, I just want to touch this because we've talked about this before in a past podcast, sometimes are a little reticent to embrace that fantasy aspect of themselves. But we all want that from you. You know what I mean? I mean, I'd like the fact that, you know, you show me your studio and you're working on stuff and everything. But I also, when I see your album cover, man, I kind of want to be transported. You know what I mean? When I hear your music, I want to be I want to see you as a little larger than life, you know, because you're doing something I don't know how to do. And it's a mystery to me and it's really cool. And I wish I was cool like you. And we all want those folks. And I mean, that's what that whole adolescent fascination with rock music in the 70s and 80s was all about was these guys were cool. You know, they got all the girls and they looked cool and they played loud guitars and they were giving the middle finger to, you know, the man or whatever. So whatever the thing is, I think that people want that. So don't shy away from doing that. And if you can work, I mean, there's probably a lot of folks that listen, maybe you guys are in college or whatever, you know, there's a film department. There's a computer department in your college. Start talking to those guys, because guys are developing games or things like that. They may be like, you know, they may be totally hot to like work with a musician. You know, guys that are making small indie films. I scored an indie film many years ago. It was super fun to do, and it got my name out there a bit. I should have done more. I haven't followed up with that. So they're great opportunities, because the indie filmmakers want people to see their movie, so they're going to be promoting for you. It's an opportunity to be heard by a lot of people. So don't shy away from that stuff and embrace your rock starness. Right, Carrie?
Oh, yeah. I mean, the other thing about talking with the film department, the art department, all these other things, this is culture.
Yeah.
As a musician, you are part of popular culture, and that means everything. So get to know everything.
It's a good point.
Know what books are in that saying. You should, I mean, like, that's the other thing. If you're a musician and you're only being inspired by music, you're cutting off a whole lot of what's going to be talking to people's lives. So yeah, do watch movies, watch TV, read books, play games. All of these things are part of culture, and culture is what we're in the business of.
And I just want to make one more clarification on the article. I don't necessarily see is music having to compete with these other formats. What I see is these other formats as an opportunity for musicians to work in different ways, into joint venture with other companies doing different things, whether it be gaming or whatever. Let's
talk. The other thing is with that, just one last point on that. Certainly when I was growing up, and I was gaming particularly in the 16-bit era, and this was before there was lots of voice acting you had to listen to when you were playing a game, and it all came along in text. Oftentimes, I might listen to the game the first few playthroughs just so I could hear what the soundtrack's like. But what I'll probably end up doing is turn the sound off and put an album on while I'm playing the game. To the point now, there's certain classic retro games that I associate with certain albums that I was listening to at the time.
You're not alone. I did that all the time. We're back, like, in fact, once you heard the sounds, then it would turn the volume down real low or off, and I would just maybe put the radio on or listen to a record or something like that. Absolutely. Let's talk in the closing part here. Let's talk about the financial aspect. Labels and producers traditionally held the power to make the artist's decisions. However, social media has empowered artists to create personal brand, connect fans directly without any label interference. This will lead to labels taking more of a VC-like approach, handling the financials while the artists and their manager focus on artistic direction and brand building. Those of you that listen to us, you're, again, probably going like, well, duh. That's exactly what I'm doing. But this brings up a question, Carrie. And Joe, is a record label for most people even something we should be even like all that concerned about?
What's a record label do?
Exactly. Yeah. Joe doesn't even know what a record label does. I mean, I'm not making fun out of you. I'm like, that's a good point. Just the fact that you had to ask that question.
I don't know. Like,
what you're doing for me with the other thing, you know what I mean? That's basically that's not just what a record label does, but they handle like the marketing and the advertising and connecting with the fans and things like that. Traditionally, that's what they've done, the branding and things like that. But what ends up happening is they've also meddled heavily in the artistic side of things, which makes a lot of artists very upset. Well, I think that if you're smart, and you learn from people like us and Leah and the different people like that, you can just put some key people in place that help you with your marketing, somebody like Joe or whatever. And you don't really, you could do a lot on your own. So
do they help you like contact with other people, build your network, and like create gigs or events to get you exposed as well?
One of the things that record labels will have that we don't necessarily have is pluggers. And pluggers are one of the vital people in the music industry that aren't always, I don't know if I call them unsung heroes, because the people that know what they do know how important they are. But what pluggers do is they go along to radio stations and music stores and all the other places with armfuls of records, and they make that radio station want to play that record, or they make that record store want to play.
So in other words, if I took and got a collection of influencers and had them play your music on their podcast basically, or on their YouTube or whatever, that would replace that, which is more prevalent these days anyway.
Well, pluggers are the guys who are known by the DJs at radio stations. Yeah. They are the guys that are going to be able to get it on, who will be able to have the contacts to make people, get them on the playlist that needs to be, and get them to that higher level. So in answer to your question about what the record labels do, if you want to be a superstar touring the world and getting the Mercury Music Prize and all the rest, yeah, at that level, you need to be on a label. That is still major label stuff, because they have the contact, they have the contacts and the pluggers and the distribution reach that we will never have as independents. But below that point, at an independent level, it's a lot less clear cut. And what you certainly don't need, and this was the thing before when record labels did have the power, would be where you had this idea that if you're a musician, you couldn't even get on the ladder. You couldn't even say you had a career until you were signed to a label. And initially that would lead to things like the dreaded shelving contract. Do you know what that is? A shelving contract, and many people have been caught up by this. It's just like when a sports team will buy up a promising prospect just so their opponents won't have them. And then they'll just sit them on the bench and for the duration of their contract. So basically that player now doesn't have a career, because they've just been bought up, so they'll be sat on the bench. And it's exactly the same with a band, is that they'll be bought up and signed onto a contract where we might let you make an album, we might make an album but never release it. But either way, you're never going to be releasing an album for someone else that we'll have to compete with.
So what you just said and what this article is saying says to me that it's not exactly what they're saying, is it's not as necessary to become a musician and get recognized as a musician and monetize your music. Mm-hmm. To get on a record label, especially in the beginning, you don't want to be giving up your rights and stuff like that. Now we have influencers, we have other channels, we have other ways to market, we have other playlists and things we can plug into in order to market our stuff. So, you know, the record labels will at some point, or probably are, change their game. So they're working with a different audience than indie artists who are starting out. They're looking for people probably with like an email list that's X amount, a fan base that's X amount, so they can take them to the next level.
Well, what the model I see, in my opinion, what I've seen in the past 10 years with in terms of labels is, first of all, there are fewer and fewer major labels. I mean, there were tons of major labels starting, you know, from the late 60s through the 70s, 80s, and 90s. And these major labels, what I've seen, Carrie, maybe you can chime in on this. These are people, I don't think that they do that, Joe. I think that they would see an artist like that as maybe a pain in the ass, because they're going to come in, they're going to have their own fans, they're going to be kind of demanding. I think what a lot of them like to do is find really young kids, like somebody who's really good on YouTube, good looking, does have a good voice, you know what I mean, has that teen appeal that they can kind of mold, make, somebody who will shut up and do what this, you know, who just wants to be a star, who just wants to be famous, where fame and fortune and things like that are maybe a little bit more important to them than like what exactly kind of music they do. And this allows them to kind of like do it, because they have a algorithm, you know, in their brain about what is going to, you know, what appeals to this demographic at this time. These guys have charts and graphs and, you know, they have focus groups, and they do stuff like they call people up and have them listen to three songs, you know, and that's how they pick what the single is going to be. I mean, they do tons and tons, and it's very, very, so yes, you know, there is the artist with a big list that can break through and maybe get signed by a band. But the other side of it is he's like really young folks that are cute, have a nice voice. What can we do with this? Let's manipulate this. Let's make something out of this. All those bands that happened in the late '90s and early 2000s, those vocal bands were all put together by industry people. They brought these kids together. They sound, you know, they handpicked who they wanted by how they looked, how their voices sounded, et cetera. And these were created. That doesn't, I don't know if that makes the music like any less legit. I mean, if you like it, you like the Backstreet Boys and NSYNC and those bands. I mean, hey, man, they sound great. They're great singers. I mean, that isn't what I would turn on just to listen to, but whatever. That's your thing, and I'm not knocking it, but that is an approach, you know, a very kind of pre-AI, but yet very kind of like formulaic. Is that the word I want, Carrie? Kind of like approach to like getting something that will be financially viable, right?
Mm.
Okay.
Yeah, and stuff they can just shovel out. And obviously, that when you think of like your Simon Fuller, Simon Cowell's, people like that, the impresarios.
Yeah.
I mean, like, and as I say, I mean, it's tough to say because, as I said before, we're not in that business. It's a different business.
So I would tell folk, anybody listening to this, if you're a songwriter, singer, whatever, do what Joe said. Build, you know, start building an audience now. Don't wait for that because you don't know what's going to happen. And you may pass the quote unquote expiration date of what is it, 23, 24, whatever, where they don't, you know, you're too old now. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you saying you may still want to do it or you may want to play music in your own way. There was a big push in the late '90s and early 2000s for these bands that could go out and pack places consistently and stuff. Again, labels were interested at that time, but man, this business is just, it's a freaking, it's like a moving target, man. I mean, probably by the time this podcast comes out, it'll all be different.
I mean, what you said earlier about there being less major labels, I mean, like, when I was sort of training and doing all this, we always knew about the big six major labels. Now it's big three.
Yeah. It's really like, And
so
good.
The other button I want to push, because I'm reading it in this article and I'm realizing we're saying this a lot and we're an advocate for building your own list, you know, going out, figuring out the social media, do this, do that. It's a lot of work. So there's a lot of things that you have to do. And that will take you away from actually developing your music. And this article here says that with more and more managers taking the power back to run things directly, something they're starting to realize is that their operation needs solid structure and support. So it sounds to me like there's a possibility, and I'm not a manager for Lou, but I do his marketing. There's a possibility that after a certain level of success, after a certain level of character and persona and music development, that you could either get a marketing person or a manager to go out and take some of this off your plate. You wouldn't have to do as much of it, but you don't need to pay like a label or someone like that. What do you guys feel about that?
Yeah, I mean, like this, what that puts me in mind of, Stan Lee in his autobiography, when he was said about when they were in the golden age of Marvel, when they were putting the comic books out, he said that it sort of felt like that in the creative side of Marvel, where they were making the comics, they were like the children. And then in the office next door, where all the marketing guys were, and the people that were putting the comics out on the newsstands, they were like the grown-ups. And they kind of needed the grown-ups to look after them. But because they had the grown-ups doing all that stuff, it meant that they could go ahead and make the comics and make Marvel what it was.
I think that you know, this goes back to our show on having a team, and that's exactly what Joe is, I believe, referring to. Is just at some point you're going to slowly start bringing in other people. They're going to start to come around, and they're going to have to help you because you can't do all this stuff yourself. I think also that era of having the grown-ups facilitated a lot of the shenanigans that happened in the 60s, 70s, and 80s, and part in some of the 90s with the bands and, you know, the legendary stories of, you know, the antics on tour and in the studio. Mm-hmm. And stuff, because, you know, they knew that, yeah, They knew that there was the grown-up accountant or lawyer or manager who would, like, fix the problem. So they would just do whatever they wanted to do. Part of me longs for those days back. I wish that we still had rock stars tearing up hotel rooms and running their sports cars into swimming pools and things like that.
Where us old folks want the 80s back all the time. So.
Yeah. Yeah. So I mean, and I think that that's what added to that mystique. So we just have to find a way to do it different, guys, because if you're going to be, you can't spend all your time partying and do this as an indie musician. Like, it's not going to work. So we have to find other ways to kind of be legendary, exciting fantasy characters to our fans. Check out the article. I put a link to it in the show notes. It's at soundcharts.com/blog/musicindustrytrends, or just search current music industry trends on Google, and it's like the first thing that comes up. And so what do you think about it? You know, do you think this is BS? I think that they make some good points. I think they you know, we agree and disagree on there's a couple things we didn't really get to, but I think we caught the gist of it.
So I kind of have an interesting idea if you guys still have 5 minutes. So with Michael Jackson, with that whole thing, they had him as a hologram. They projected him onto the stage, right? Mm-hmm. And he actually does concerts. I believe it's actually a show in Vegas at this point, too. I may be wrong. So with that, and the idea that as a marketer, I can create a spokesperson, like a made-up spokesperson, 3D, you see it on the screen. It's a person that represents the business, but they're not real at all. And I can make it talk and say whatever I want it to say and become an actual influencer. I think there is a possibility in the future that you're going to have musicians pop up that just don't exist. You know what I mean? You're going to have, well, we're not going to go there, but you're going to have all kinds of different areas where this is going to come.
They've done that already in Japan. There is, there are some virtual pop stars that they came up with software in Japan with much ballyhoo. So that day arrived about 10 years ago. They've done it.
I wonder why something like that hasn't taken off.
But there's still a person 10 years ago. You would still have needed somebody to actually sing and play if they're singing and playing, right? So they're not completely virtual.
That's what I'm saying is, with all the software and algorithms, I think I could totally make up a completely make-believe person, give them a name, give them a persona, give them a theme for their music, and use algorithms to at least do a percentage of the music development.
Well, the Spotify has released its own music. This was quickly criticized a few years ago, but why not? Audible releases their own books. What's the difference? You know what I mean? If you like it, you like it. If it sounds good and you want to listen to it, whatever.
Well, this is Infinite Monkeys and Infinite Typewriters.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really know what to say about that. I know that, you know, there was talk about Ronnie James Dio touring as a hologram. I will not go, as a matter of principle, as much as he's one of my favorite singers of all
Roy
time.
Roy Orbison was the other famous one that they did with that.
Yeah, I mean, like...
I thought there was somebody who went and he said, like, I'll go with it, I'll go, but why did they have to make him rise up through the floor like a demon at the beginning of the show?
The next question was going to be, if they took a famous musician that you followed and really, really enjoyed, and they said, okay, we're going to do this holographic presentation, we're going to do a concert, but we're coming out with all new music that, you know, two or three new songs that are based off of all these songs put together in an algorithm that creates a new song based off of all old music, people who really love that person might not want to go because they know it's fake. It's not a real song written by that person.
And what you've got is this thing has a name. I'm trying to think of what I could apply it to. The first thing that comes to mind actually that gets applied to is The Simpsons. Just, you know, that a lot of like Simpsons fans, generally the consensus is the first 10 seasons were fantastic, but then gradually it went down. And at the moment, there's a lot of people who really don't like, I'm one of them. I haven't watched The Simpsons in about 15 years. But I've since found out that a lot of people call it Zombie Simpsons. Because what they've ended up doing is they're like following the formula of the characters and what they do in the joke. But it's like the soul isn't there anymore, and it hasn't been there for some time because they're just following the formula now.
I think you said in a very important word, Gary. You said zombie. You said soul. Mm. And that is what you end up when you take the soul out. You've just got zombie music. You've got zombie actors. You've got zombie performances. And I don't know if humanity can, like, on a large scale, like, get really rock out to that. Mm. You know what I mean? Like, we want to rock out. When I say rock out, we can rock out to hip hop. You can rock out to country. What I'm not talking about is the genre. I'm talking about, you know, that's what really moves is this is a guy who's laying his freaking guts out on the line with his music. And, like, you know, the band is like putting their balls into it, you know, whether it's freaking, you know, bluegrass or, you know, techno metal, whatever it is. Well, that's what we really want. We can all make it sound nice. It's like going back to Carrie's story about the synthesizer. And my story, a little bit old, was I remember going into Gerrera's Music in Washington, Pennsylvania, at the mall, and there was a guy. Remember the organ? You press the one button and it played a whole song. You know what I mean? I was like, oh my God! And you know how many of those songs got on the charts? You know how many of those songs became like songs that people are still belovedly listening to today? Zero. So it's not, I don't know. And maybe once we become integrated with AI, we get the chips in our brains or whatever, maybe that will become more appealing to us. But I think why people love music is because it's that's that guy just putting, or a girl or transgendered person, whatever your thing is, putting out something that's of real feeling to them. We're human beings. We want to hear human beings doing stuff. It's the same way, like, why, you know, maybe post-COVID this will be different. This is why, like, yes, there's great animated movies out there. They're amazing. But everybody kind of knows how it's done. Everybody kind of knows it's CGI and kind of rolls their eyes. But going to see, you know, real actors in a real movie putting out real emotion, that never gets old. People crave that. So great. I think, Joe, I think, like, there's a place for that. Maybe in marketing, maybe you create a virtual MC or something like that. If everybody knows that it's virtual, a virtual spokesperson who's kind of funny or interesting or whatever. But I think that's just leading that to just lead people to the real feeling. That is my opinion on it.
Wow.
All right.
I think we should leave it there.
Yeah, let's leave it there. All right, Carrie, if folks want to find you on the internet, how do they do that again?
KJKmusic.co.uk.
And Mr. Freeman, how do we find you?
Just go to LouLombardiRocks.com.
All right, guys. LouLombardiRocks.com is the way to get involved with all the stuff. If you like these podcasts, you want to have access to exclusive content, we're going to be doing an instrument giveaway. And I did get the guitar, Joe. I got it sitting right here. Cool. So we're going to be doing a guitar giveaway coming up, so you don't want to miss that. So check that out at LouLombardiRocks.com. You guys have a great week, and we'll talk to you on the next Ludini Rock and Roll Circus Musicians Mastermind.